Welcome to 216, a Link to the Past Randomizer podcast. I'm your host, Fear Agent. Excellent show. We're going to complete the Magno Brogor duo here today with Brogor on the show. I kind of wish I did them back to back, but it's close enough. We'll just call it a duo. Had a really good chat with Brogor. Really interesting dude. Really funny. And just really loved hearing his story. So make sure you stick around for that. Also on the show today, we've got the 216 co-op Crosskeys champions, Telethar and Humbug. Talk to them a little bit about the tournament. Just going to be a short little interview here where we get their impressions of the tournament and how they did and just their overall thoughts on co-op and Crosskeys and all that stuff. Fun little conversation, a little bonus for this episode. So I'm going to keep this intro short because we are going to run long with two interviews, but not a lot going on. So there's the vote for auto tracking, but that's whatever. Ramon and I got our first race in for the co-op tournament. We were able to race Crosskeys with pseudo boots against GFE and P-Train. Ramon finished with a 109. We won that race. That was a lot of fun. Turns out Ramon's really good at this game. I feel very fortunate to be able to team up with guys like Ramon and Gamma and kind of ride their coattails a little bit, but we had a good time. It's a lot of fun, and we love playing co-op, especially co-op Crosskeys, so that was cool. Other than that, been playing Baldur's Gate, been posting some stuff in the off-topic. Just got totally unlucky in one of my runs, but got revenge just last night, so that's been going pretty good. I've been watching a lot of movies. The Oscars are happening in about 2 hours from when I'm recording this. I'm a sucker for the Oscar stuff. I just love movies in general. There's certain people in the community that I've talked movies with. Shinmaru is one of them. He wasn't really into the Oscars, but I don't know. There's just something fun about the Oscars. And so I tried to catch up on most of the movies that have been nominated for Best Picture. I think I was able to see 6 of them. Watched Poor Things. I thought that was okay. It's just super weird. Watched Past Lives. I thought that was really, really good. And I just finished Killers of the Flower Moon. So those are a couple that I wanted to see before Oscars happens. I think it's just going to be all Oppenheimer. So I think it's going to be kind of like when Lord of the Rings won all 11. I think Oppenheimer is just going to sweep the board and win most of the categories that they're in. So been watching a lot of movies and we'll continue to watch a lot of movies. I have a lot of movies that I've purchased and haven't watched. And so kind of in the mood to go back and check those out. So probably won't be playing a ton of video games, but watching a lot of movies. So yeah, not a lot going on. So let's get to the interviews. First up, we've got Telethar and Humbug, the champions of the first tournament that we ran here on 216, both previous guests. So you can listen to those as well if you want to hear their full stories. But yeah, just talk to them about the tournament and how it went. So here it goes, Telethar and Humbug. All right. Well, first off, thanks for joining the show. Really appreciate having the champs here. Congratulations on winning what I consider the most prestigious tournament in the past randomizer tournament history. So GGs and welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've got Telethar and Humbug, if you didn't know. Both previous guests on 216, so we're not going to cover the history. We're going to talk a little bit about the tournament. First, I guess, overall impressions of the first 216 tournament and then co-op Crosskeys in general.
Humbug, go.
Go ahead, tell them.
God damn it. All right. I mean, I thought it was great. I mean, I think the mode is really fun. Obviously, unsurprisingly, I like entrance mode. I feel like co-op is, like, the more I play co-op, the less I want to play not co-op. Like, right. The past randomizer racing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I feel the exact same way.
It's like, it makes it faster, it makes it more dynamic. It also, you're not just hanging out by yourself. Even if you have a chat, you're like, it's much more, you know, you're playing with your friend. Mm-hmm. And whereas, like, solo racing is like, you know, this seat sucks and I'm bored. Like,
yeah,
makes it harder.
Definitely makes it harder.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because there hasn't been, we've had co-op tournaments and we have the league, obviously, but we've never had co-op Crosskeys as far as a tournament goes. I know people have played it here and there, but it's kind of hard to organize. You need time and you need people that are interested in it. And it just never really happened. So what was your guys' approach to co-op Crosskeys and how did that differ from other co-op modes?
So obviously both Telethar and I have played a lot of entrance. And so like the co-op part of this is a lot of just being careful of when to shout entrances to each other. So you don't like overflow with information, but also right. To know what to call stuff and stuff like that. But like what it comes down to is like, it's very thorough tracking, I feel, is one of the hardest part about this. And it's the part that I think I'm worse at.
Do you use a share tracker or you guys just?
No.
Okay. No, we just yell at each other.
Okay. We yell at each other.
All right.
I mean, our approach more realistically was Humbug's really good at the game. I'm pretty good at the game. The plan was I'm going to tell Humbug what I'm doing and he's going to tell me what he's doing. And we'll make educated decisions based on that.
Yeah.
Right. It was like he's going to do his thing. He'll make the best decision for where he's at. And he just needs to let me know so I can try and avoid him when necessary.
Yeah.
Right. It's not like someone's the playmaker or anything like that. It's just we're just going to both play our game and it'll work out fine.
Like in a way, I agree with that. Like we pretty much just try to individually have the best times possible.
Mm-hmm.
But there is also like the part where I'm going to just go ahead and say that I think that objectively, I believe that Utilithar had more control, I think, over like the overall route that we took most of the time than I did. I'm not saying that you did everything or that I did nothing or that I just followed your lead or anything, but I think like it felt to me that you had a bit more grasp on what we were both doing while I was largely focusing on what I was doing, but I was trying to do both.
Yeah, I mean every once in a while we'd sort of, you know, it'd be what are we doing next? And we sort of looked at what we had available and where a good option was to go next. And probably, I was more often the one that said, you should do this next, as opposed to Humbug telling me I should do something next. Not that it was a one-way street at all. But
right, you weren't the boss, but you were able to put stuff together quicker, I think, maybe, what you're saying. Yeah. I think that's the problem that Moogle and I had when we first played, is there's so much information happening so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're doing a normal cross key seed, you are physically going into all the different entrances. You're getting all the items. You're putting it all in the logic, right? But when you're getting half of the information, you have to be able to take that in while you're doing your normal stuff and process it and put the logic of like, oh, maybe you should do this. Maybe you should do that. Did you guys find that having that communication or finding a way to communicate that came naturally? Or did it come with a lot of practice?
I think Humbug was the one who was better at sort of like watching the logic, to be honest. I think that he was more aware of it.
There's so much of putting pieces together in cross keys, more so than in like an AD or even retrance, right? Because with retrance, you have, keys are just, there's no key, like regular key logic. It's like a normal open, except for the big keys. This, you got to kind of, like your partner picks up like say three pod keys or something. And you have none, you have to kind of keep that in the back of your mind, what the pod logic is, or you know, like, should we go waste time here? Or did you guys kind of just like, let's just kind of play our game? I don't know.
I think you and I differ a little bit in like our approach when we play solo cross keys. Because I know that you are very thorough with like piecing through the logic in a way. And try to, in many ways, like not diverge from the logic as much as maybe I do. Occasionally, I think. And I think that we managed to find like a good balance between the two.
Yeah. I mean, it felt pretty good.
I mean, it worked. You guys won the tournament. But I'm just kind of trying to figure out, because everyone's doing their own thing. We didn't get to watch a lot because, it wasn't restreamed until the top four. So seeing everyone's approach is a little bit different on how, you know what I mean, how you play cross keys and then how you integrate the co-op aspect of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the group stage portion. You guys lost one race, right? Through the whole thing? That's how you top four?
Yeah, we lost our first match, I think it was, or maybe the second. I don't remember.
Who was that to?
Tam and Worf.
Oh, okay. Really strong team. I mean, there was really strong teams throughout the entire group stage. It never felt like there was, hey, this is a free matchup.
Yeah, no, it definitely wasn't a free matchup. Just being realistic here, what happened was Humbug died on Pendant Coldstair, and then we found the map for Pendant Coldstair, and then the fire rod was on Pendant Coldstair.
Oh, jeez.
So, like, that's what happened there. We they didn't have a chance to beat us because we lost like at the moment that happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was like, okay, it's fine that I died on Pendant Cops there because it was Pendant Cops there.
Cool. Right.
I don't have to go back.
That's a tough one.
It was a tough one.
I mean, yeah, it happens.
Sure, it totally happens.
Like, co-op is inherently low percent. It was, you know, obviously fire rodless cold stare, like.
Yeah.
But it sucks.
So do you remember all the teams that you played? The six, I guess it would be six teams that you played throughout. Who was your last couple of matches to make it into the top four? Do you remember?
It was Gamma and Megawatt, I believe.
Mm. That was our, yeah, that was our top four qualifier.
Yeah.
Damn, that's rough. That's a rough matchup to qualify. Were you sweating that one?
I mean, yes.
Yeah, we were a bit sweating the moment we started the tournament 0-1.
Yeah, that's tough. That's tough to, I mean, you literally have one loss to give the entire tournament.
Yeah.
With it being as short as it is, and then you know, only having a top four.
Yeah.
Tell me about the top four experience. You guys played round one, you played
Children's Kingdom.
Oh, okay. The only undefeated team going into into the brackets. Tell me about that.
It was three. I remember it as being three vivid, like really different games. If I remember correctly, the first one, we just sort of made every correct decision, but it was still very, very close.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, if I remember correctly, we won and then it was close. And I was like, I'm actually super surprised this was close. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I felt like we were going to be way ahead.
Because we really like hit the route or whatever. Yeah. And then the second one, we didn't hit goal mode when they both had finished.
Mm.
That's how that went.
Yeah.
And then the third one was also a situation where I think we made very sound decisions and played that seed really well. There was some junk behind, was it Mitz behind GT Climb, I think?
Yeah, it was Mitz behind GT Climb for TR Mickey on Purple Chest.
Yes, that race was intense because you guys really needed something to be behind those Mitz to win that race, and there was. It was something in the Purple Chest or whatever, and that worked out for you guys.
Yeah.
Right, because the hammer was horrible on East Dark World and they got it they got it before us, and the hammer led to literally everything except for Mitz.
Yeah. And that's right. Hammer was in the pod entrance and whatever was what was there, and I used the GT Climb as my way to get to to the hammer.
Yeah.
So I got the Mitz on the way and that was just super cool.
Yeah. Really fun race to watch. Yeah, I got to commentate most of the brackets, so really interesting to see how things shaked out. So then you guys go up against Alzin and Goomba. I think probably the favorites going into the tournament, right? Like if you just look in at the async sheet, the James FNX website that has all the asyncs, I think they did all of them and more. Like there was no team that played more co-op crosskeys than Alzin and Goomba, obviously two really strong runners anyways, but
yeah.
What were you guys thinking going into the finals? Were you just kind of happy to be there? And
yeah, I mean, they were obviously a very good team, but I don't know. In my mind, we were just going to play our game and see how it went. Like, realistically, I do think that we have an execution advantage. And so, like, it just came down to if they could out-efficiency us with having more experience or, you know, or luck.
Yeah,
like, whoever gets lucky was realistically probably going to win because the mode is hard.
The mode is hard. Mode really is hard. And luck does play a factor. But did you guys think that co-oping, the fact that you're getting twice as much information, you know, you have one person going left, one person going right, usually mitigates some of that luck?
No, I think it exacerbates it.
Oh, yeah. Really? Agreed. Yeah.
Like, realistically, I think that people overplay how, you know, cross keys is lucky because you chose the wrong connector and that caused you. Like, it doesn't. Like, if you're not really careful and like about being efficient in cross keys, it can cost you a lot of time when you know, some small number of seeds when you're playing solo can screw you over, and you can waste a lot of time because you didn't get the mirror with on the other connector. Like, that can happen for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not really that bad, whereas in co-op, like, I think one of the games, right, they whoever found desert connector didn't have the big key, and so they didn't get the hammer, which cracked open the seed. And it's like,
it was the same thing for us in the game we lost to Schulzer and Tito, where I did not have a Castle Tower small when I found Castle Tower.
Right.
First we're in the second chest, and we just never went back. Like, it's the same thing. It's not just finding, like, going left or right. It's also, like, the correct person needs to go left at the correct time. And it's, like, the luck part of it, just, there's another layer to the luck part.
Sure. It always felt like whoever found the bottle wasn't the person to find Sick Kid who had progression. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, oh, there's a bottle over here. Oh, I just found Sick Kid. It's like, we could have swapped that. You know, now we got the boots from Sick Kid.
Yeah, and I guess more realistically, an even bigger part of it is, like, in normal cross keys, like, maybe you should have taken the right exit out of Hyrule Castle because the left one spits you out in mire and then you can't get your Moon Pearl. Like, maybe that happens. But everyone always goes left first because it's just a quicker walk. It's like, I should have gone right. That sucks that I didn't. It cost me time. But, like, I know when I'm playing Humbug, he also went left. He also gets locked out the same way I did and has to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, maybe Humbug goes left and I go right, and Humbug has the bottle and right is Sick Kid. And, like,
right.
Exactly. Like, that's the problem is, like, you can very reasonably flip those two. Sure. Whereas you can't flip normal cross keys. Humbug's always going left and I'm always going left.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I see it. You mentioned this briefly in the post-race interview after you guys won about how you guys got together, but you guys haven't been teammates before, right? In the league or anything. This is the first time you guys teamed up for something?
We teamed up for Survivors of Hyrule.
Oh, okay. So how did this the Nick Hare Basement Cage team form this time?
How did the team form or how did the name form?
Let's go with both.
Well, I had asked Humbug to team with me for pilot spoiler last time it was on season. And then he said yes, and then he bailed on me.
Yes. So yeah, this was just a pity play from my part.
Basically, he pitied me and we got the tournament win because of it. You know, he's like, I'll get you this tournament win. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
But yeah, no. Basically, I was like, oh, you know, I like Humbug. Humbug's a good guy. Humbug's good at the game. I want to play co-op with Humbug. And so the moment I found out that this was a thing, I was like, hey, by the way.
And you did find that out, like, significantly earlier than most other people did find that out.
Yeah, I got the inside scoop at SGL.
Yeah, it pays to be at SGL. It pays to be in the Gamma Party House, I guess.
But yeah, that was basically the gist of it. The name.
It's a great name. I'm surprised no one's come up with it for a league team or anything else.
So I have me and a couple of friends here. We have a tendency to go to music quips. Quizzes or pub quizzes or whatever. And when we're there, we try to come up with witty team names. And the last time that we were there, our team name was Quizdina Aguilera, which I just found hilarious.
Sure.
I don't know. I'm not much of a pun guy usually, but in this case, it just works for me. So I just, it was during a random stream that I did, and Telethar was in my chat, and we just, like, what's our team name going to be? And I just thought, like, in the same line as I did think when I came up with Christina Aguilera, and I just thought of something in this game, something. Hera Basement Cage was what I thought. And when I said cage, I just thought, okay, Nick Cage. All right, there it is. I just suggested it, and Telethar just laughed out loud. And
Yeah, it works. It's a great name. Well, again, GGs to you both. And, you know, it was really impressive to watch you guys' run. I wasn't sure who was going to win this thing when you looked at the top four. Shoot, even when you just looked at the original group stage, it was a who's who of Krosky's players. So, you know, not only just the winning thing, making the top four seemed pretty daunting. But your guys' run was really impressive.
I feel like Krosky's has, like, it is a focal point of where a lot of veteran players still dwell in the community. And when you put together a tournament like this, where you take cross keys, which we've done a lot, and cranks up the difficulty level, the veterans will play. And that's what I felt was so fun about this. Like, a lot of people came out that haven't done that in a while, like Goomba, just for instance. as a Crosskeys player. It was just so cool to see so many veteran players join this tournament, join a silly co-op Crosskeys tournament that was so fun to be a part of.
Awesome. Any last thoughts before anything you want to shout out or just say about anything, the tournament or otherwise?
I mean, it was a great tournament. I hope it happens again. I love the mode, and also the tournament itself was very smooth.
Yes, it was smooth. It was quick. It was like the players got to play 3/4 of the tournament, like everyone.
Yeah.
Which was just super, super cool.
I love Shout it. Outs to everyone we scheduled with who was... Yes. It was really easy to actually schedule all of our matches. It's like, like beyond just the bot, just the people we scheduled with, everyone was like, okay, yeah, we can do that. And like every match was able to get scheduled without it feeling like it's pulling teeth or anything. Mm-hmm. Everyone was just ready to play the game.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, again, congratulations and GGs. And we will run this back. So hope to see Nick Hera Basement Cage back defending their title.
Yes.
Once again, GGs to those dudes. Tough tournament. It really was. Like, it was hard to make the top four, and then to win out is just tough. So, really strong teams in the top four, really strong teams that didn't make the top four. So, a real impressive run by both Humbug and Telethar, who are champions in other tournaments as well. Just really good runners and really good dudes. So, pleasure to have them back on the show talking about that. You know, the tournament went really well, and I was really happy with it, and the volunteers were great, and the runners, I feel like, had a good time. So, yeah, we'll bring that back at some point. But let's get to an interview with Brogar. I really enjoy these episodes where I don't really know anything about them. Part of it is a challenge. Like, what are we going to talk about? Can we talk for a full hour? And then we get to the end of the conversation. It was like, where did the time go? It was really easy. And Brogar is really easy to talk to and really, really interested in hearing his story and in his... And hearing his perspective of his relationship with Magno as well. Like, we heard that a couple episodes ago with Magno and how they became friends and stuff. And we get to hear it from Brogar right here as well. So let's get to it. Here's Brogar. Did you... the question literally left my head as I was about to ask it.
Yeah, I know that feeling. That's the worst, like, right?
I had the question.
That's when you get 30 and older. Before, it never happened.
I know. I'm in my 40s, so it happens a lot more now. Even
yeah.
I was like, oh, here's the perfect question to ask you, and then it went completely went away.
That's a good start.
So you got your start in Rando around the same time as Magno. I know we had Magno on the show, and we talked a lot about you, and you guys have become close, and it won't all just be about each other. But I mean, Magno and Brogar go together. It's like you guys are a pair, a duo.
Yeah.
So it feels like pretty natural to lump you together. But did you start playing before he did?
Yeah, I actually did. And I started playing even further back. I don't know exactly when my first actual race was. I think it's 4 years ago by this time of the year. So like 2020, something like that. Maybe a bit before. And I witnessed Spleeby. Everybody knows Spleeby, I guess. He was my first interaction with a randomizer, I think. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And I just, Magno told he was watching a long time before. So I also started watching other guys. And then there was like, I met an Austrian person and they were like, hey, you want to play this together? And I played with Lopoi, some Brazilian guy. Maybe some people know him. Maybe not so known these days. But yeah, we started to play Rando. And then there came the first German tournament, the bigger one. Not the first, but a big tournament turned up, and I applied, and there I met people like Nadine, mostly known to the NMG runners, I guess. And then my first opponent, who is still pretty known today, was Joubert.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And then I beat Joubert, and he's still seeking revenge, but never had a chance again.
Yeah.
And then I met Ravis as my fourth opponent, and then I dropped out.
I see.
Yeah, that was around my start. Yeah, so Spleeby, and yeah, then lightly tapping from international to German first. So that's funny, actually.
Did you grow up playing video games? Was Link to the Past a game that you played a lot growing up? You're in Germany, right? I don't want to just
presume. Yeah, I'm in northern Germany, yeah. Okay. Quite close to Magno, yeah. Because you asked him if we're related. No, we're not. We're just like 1 or 2 hours. We're like very close in kilometers or miles.
Sure. So you were growing up playing video games?
Yes, I got a Game Boy, the big one that makes your hands hurt because it's so heavy when you're small. I got Mega Man and Tetris as my first games, I think.
So your first gaming experience was the handheld?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There was my bigger cousin. He was very addicted already. And my mom was very eager to protect me from going the same path as he did. And so I was like very restricted in consumption of video games and stuff.
What path is that? Just being addicted to video games? Or
the everyday path nowadays. Everyone. Yeah, but she was scared because he was like, you know, from videos, that kid that's really angry and just demolishes stuff and
right. Yep. Yeah. Sure.
So for me it was natural to be outside, and we played, I don't know, James Bond. We even played real life Link to the Past with my cousin when he couldn't play computer games. When he was around, I wasn't allowed to play, so he's not in a bad mood.
You played real life Link to the Past? Is that what you said?
Yeah, we mixed games. So my mother was always busy working. Mm-hmm. And so my sister and my cousin, we played like, I don't know, we imagined we were cruising on a lava river, something like that.
That's awesome.
And my sister had to be the lava fish of Super Mario World. And we were Link and Pink, and I couldn't be Link because he was Link, right? So I couldn't only be Pink. I was the sidekick, so to say. So what's my job? You just accompany me and help me out with stuff. So yeah, children fantasy going on.
That's awesome, though. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
So yeah, you were limited basically on the amount of video games that you could play.
Yeah, the time. Yeah.
Sure.
At first.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think a lot of us, especially back then, there was a fear of like, oh, video games are going to corrupt your mind, or they're going to take up all your time, or going to turn us into all demons, basically. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I know.
Like, I remember when Mortal Kombat came out and everyone's like, ooh. Like, especially for kids, it's like, this is going to destroy children as we know it, right?
Yeah.
Nah, didn't really.
Yeah, Mortal Kombat was actually a topic once because my neighbor had that, and my mom saw what he played, and he was like, you're gonna never touch this game. It's okay, I'm not so interested in beat 'em up games. Sure. I like the RPG part. So. Yeah, I got a Super Nintendo then, yeah.
Okay, that was my question. You got a Super Nintendo after you got a Game Boy? Okay.
Yes, with the age of, I think it joined our house when I was like 6 or 7, so it was 1993, 1994, sometime around there.
The perfect time to have a Super Nintendo.
Yeah. So I was in school then, right? So I had good marks, and then I could always go like, look, mom, I scored an A, or we call it a 1 here. And so, yeah, that's nice. Can I play Super Nintendo? Yeah, you can. Yes, let's go.
You sound like my son. Like, that's literally what my kid comes in. He's like, I did really good in school today. Can I play Fortnite? I'm like, yeah, I guess you can. I've turned into my parents. It's weird.
I mean, if you deliver the good marks, what can you do as a parent, right?
Right. Yeah, you got to reward them a little bit for sure. So what was the availability of like the Super Nintendo and the Sega and all that kind of stuff? Is it, I don't want to say the same, but was it limited, or did you guys have full access to pretty much everything in Germany?
You mean all the games and stuff?
Yeah.
We had not the amount you guys had. I think there's some games missing out here, but the main part, games like A Link to the Past and Mario and all the RPGs made it to Germany, at least. Like Luffy. Now Luffy are not maybe, but Terra Enigma, Evermore, Mana, and all the games.
Did you, were they translated, or did you have to learn English? Okay. Oh, they were. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there was some text box parts where it kept being English, and I could. My mom came from Chicago, so she was very good in English, and I could always ask if I had a question about vocabulary.
So, is your mom from Chicago, or did she just go there for a while?
Yeah, she was born in Hamburg, but she lived there her whole children and teenage days. She was a young woman. And then she met my dad in Germany.
So do you ever go to Chicago, or does she still have family over there?
Yeah, I still have a grandpa there, but okay. I have never seen him, to be honest.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think he's very, very old now, and it never quite worked out. And this is not a very delicate topic, but my mom died when I was like 13, So there was no contact on that side of family. Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, but back to the question. I got the Super Nintendo, and it was it was a better experience than the handheld, and I was super in love with that thing. I had a small sister, right? So we could play together.
Mm. So you're playing like Mario Kart?
Yes.
Whatever other, I can't even think of any other two player games, but Mario Kart is the big one.
It's, like, it's also the one that came to my mind.
Yeah. I just feel like that was one of the first like multiplayer experiences, because you know, you play Mario, Super Mario World, you play Link to the Past, it's all solo, and you could play technically with someone else in the other room, but you know, it's like one person is playing, the other person is either like watching or kind of helping. Whereas with Mario Kart, everyone got to play together.
That's right. It got even better with the N64 later for us.
Sure. Did you guys get that too?
Yeah, that we got. And at that time, we were also in high school, or here it's called gymnasium. Or so like after fifth grade, you go to the high school, so to speak. And then you have a bit more arguments like, I scored big, let us play.
So were you and your sister playing a lot?
Yeah, we kind of did. And we also had like, when this N64 came out, she had her friend circle, so to speak, and I had my friend circle, and we came from a village with 2,000 people, so not a lot of people. Maybe some people in the world know that village, because it's the Wacken village, where the big heavy metal festival actually is.
Oh.
Yeah, some people might know that, yeah. And sometimes we have been like, we were like 7 people in front of the N64, like in the big living room. And so we had to make up custom rules, right? So the first place player in the four, and I think Mario Kart you could always play just with four, right? Yeah, four players.
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
And no AI, so you just were four actual players, and the best and the worst always had to give the controller to the next person, so the best couldn't play all the time.
Really? Oh, that's interesting. It feels like if you won, you'd get a play, but I guess you could see that if that person is just the best out of everyone, they never stop playing. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe I didn't like that rule so much, but I thought it was fair.
So it's almost like you want to finish second every time, right?
Yeah, kind of trying, but people get the idea you're slacking on purpose and then they complain.
Yeah. So were you competitive?
Yeah, kind of a lot.
Like how competitive did it get? Was there fights, arguments?
With my sister? Yeah, kind of, but we were always also teaming. Like, if we played like Mario Kart against AI, we always only were allowed to finish if we were both first or second. Otherwise, we tried to get fifth at best, so you could repeat the course, stuff like that.
So it sounds like you work together better than against each other. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes. Sometimes she smashed the controller on the ground when she got angry and. Then I kind of had to smash. So we got in a brawl.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
What else were you doing besides playing video games growing up in Germany? Did you play handball? I feel like everyone I talk to plays handball.
Yeah, I did actually. But I started with football.
Sure.
And also German football, or not American football, which is also a nice thing, gotta say. And I started with football, and that's a bit of a doomsday story, because I was in the different village than all the people from my school class. So I was always a bit the outsider, because I was in a different club, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That was bad. So I was the stupid one at that point in school. But that stopped after the first 4 years when I got to that high school. Then everything went better. I also got to the same class as my sister, and we stayed together till near the very end. And it was amazing to be around each other. We never got annoyed by each other, and lived together, also helping each other in doing tests sometimes, because we had our little secret sign language with the hands and stuff.
That's awesome. Yeah. It sounds like you've got a pretty good relationship with your sister then.
Yeah, we are good on good terms. We've just been together in Sweden and been skiing.
Oh, cool.
She and my girlfriend were skiing. I'm too scared, to be honest. I fell a few times. I rather cook for everybody.
sure. So when you started playing football, you said you were kind of an outsider. Is that was the problem? Is you didn't feel like you were part of the team? Or
no, it was because everybody who was also in my class in school was was in a different club. everybody.
I see.
So they started mobbing me like really bad.
But just because you were in a different class, right?
Yeah, that's enough. Yeah.
Man,
maybe their parents didn't like my mother or something, stuff like that. Yeah.
Wow. So when you got a little bit older, that changed. Did that affect your love of playing football?
Yeah, I kind of stopped then quite early. And then a little bit later when I was like, what was the age? 13, 14, I started playing some handball. Which was way more intense, to be honest.
Sure. How big was handball in your area?
It was okay. Not as big as Magno and Ravis, I guess, but
yeah,
Magno was in third or fourth league. Yeah, we were just teenagers, right? So we just enjoyed some plays in the weekend and mostly getting the first contact with maybe some beer afterwards.
Sure. Drinking age is a little bit younger, I think.
Yeah, it was 16 back then. Yeah. I think it's also 18 now. I'm not entirely sure. So it's half a life ago, right?
Yeah, for sure. It's 21 here, which is...
Yeah, I know. But you can start driving cars earlier. That's cool, though.
When can you start driving cars?
18.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Crazy how we have all these weird arbitrary rules, right? Based off of age. Yeah.
But you drive in the right lane.
That's right. We sure
compared
do.
Compared to our English friends. Yeah.
Yeah. So what was it like growing up in Germany as you're getting older? It sounds like you weren't playing as much sports competitively, maybe just more casually. Is that right? And then what about video games?
Yeah. So the sports aspect is like there wasn't many clubs, but every school had like sports program during lessons. So you had like math lesson, German lesson, and then you had PH is like physical, right. Whatever.
Right. PE for us.
Yeah. And then you're going back to Latin or French and you're all sweaty and having a teenager and you feel embarrassed and stuff like that. So that was not always smartly handled by the school. But yeah, it was part of school life. So everybody had to endure. Yeah. But kind of jumped on the PC side of life when me and my sister both got a computer with, I think, in the year of 2000 or 99.
Mm-hmm. Did you start focusing more on computer games or playing computer games, or what were you playing?
Yeah, actually both. I started with some German games like Siedler and Anno. That's like city builders, like the Settlers, maybe.
Yeah.
And Anno is also more popular now. Yeah, and then when we got our own first computers, me and my sister, we got GTA and Diablo 2, right? So that was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun. Especially Diablo 2. We were home from school at 3 p.m. We had to leave at 6 a.m. But after 3 p.m., we mostly played Diablo 2 together or GTA multiplayer, weird stuff. I don't know, stuff like that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So were you still folks like playing console games, or was it mostly just you're just hooked on Diablo?
Sometimes consoles, but yeah, the PC, pushed the consoles away for a long time, I would say.
I see. What about Zelda in general? Were you playing a lot of Link to the Past, Ocarina of Time and stuff? Did you have like an affinity for those games?
Yes, I had a Link to the Past. I still have it. And I also have the, which I posted here on the channel somewhere, the cartridge of Zelda 1 I still own. Yeah, I had both of the N64 games, but shame on me. I like the second one more, the Majora's Mask.
Sure. No, I think that's valid. Yeah, for sure.
But nowadays my sister has that N64, so I have no chance to get my hands on that right now.
Sure. So it was fair to say that you're a Zelda fan growing up.
Yeah, all the time. I just skipped on. I have to, because when my mom died, the monetary aspects of life also were a bit.
Sure.
Yeah, and it was hard. So I had no GBA, no. Game Boy Advance or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So I skipped on some of the Game Boy Zelda games, and I also had no access to the Wii or Wii U at that time.
Okay.
But it took quite some years till I was able to earn some real cash.
Sure.
Yeah. But when I got my first paycheck, I bought a monitor. No, I bought a small TV. Mm-hmm. And the newest Pokemon game of that time. And the Nintendo DS, I think it was called, right?
I see. Yeah.
And that's where it kind of started going back to the console gaming a bit more. Started with Pokemon, went up to, at some point, then PlayStation made it to my house, and then the Switch, and and then the Rando. I always played the emulator stuff somehow. It was always in my mind or on my computer, because I really like to play Secret of Mana from time to time or other SNES games.
What was the introduction to RPGs, and was that the genre that you really gravitated towards?
RPG, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of. I really enjoyed that, yeah.
What was the first? Do you remember the game that like hooked you into RPGs?
I think it was Secret of Mana. Because I had that addicted cousin, right? And he was non-stoply talking about it until my mom bought it.
Sure.
So I had that game. I still play it from time to time.
I've never played it. What is it about? Like, what about it hooked you?
I'm not really sure. Yes, that you're a guy, have pants of evil, I don't know what he's called, sorcerer, who tries to destroy the world or whatever, and revives all the monsters. And yeah, you just travel the world with a girl and a sprite. And I always liked that sprite. And yeah, and we actually, my sister and I, we could play this together, right? So there's co-op in this game next to Mario Kart. This was one of the big co-op games. See. And
yeah,
we named the guy Link, obviously. The girl was named Zelda. And since we had no idea that the sprite was meant to be a male, I think we just named her. We were saying this was a girl. We just named her Minnie from the Mickey Mouse game or something.
Sure. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah,
is it similar to like the Final Fantasy games on the Super Nintendo, or is it?
It's more action based. It's like we have an action time. Yeah,
I see.
But I like my round based games as well. So all the RPG stuff is likable.
Did you play Final Fantasy for any of the Super Nintendo stuff? Okay.
Yeah. No. Oh yeah, that's on my to do list. My pile of shame. I have never played on the Super Nintendo except Illusion. What's it called? No, Mystic Quest. I think that's relatable to one of the first Final Fantasies, or from the same studio. I'm not entirely sure on that.
I see.
But when I was still in elementary school, there was that neighbor I told you earlier about. He was a bit older, had that brutal games like Mortal Kombat, right? And he just, on one day, he's like, I have an old PS game here for you. And I had like, at some time there, my mom had a boyfriend, and he had a PlayStation Mini one, like it was only as big as the disc. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me Final Fantasy VIII.
Mm.
So I always had, he was like, you can have that. Only the last CD is broken. So you can play the first three CDs. That's 99% of the game is still playable, right? So I can just not do the last boss, I think. Yeah, that was my first contact with a real RPG. I would say Final Fantasy VIII, and I was like very, very hooked, and I was like amazed by the graphics, and I was nonstop playing that. I even had a little television in my bedroom at that time then, and I could also sometimes play at night, but don't tell anyone. Me and my sister, we were kind of going out of boundaries there to stay awake till mom was asleep. Sure. And then we played all night.
That's so funny.
Like, she wouldn't notice when we are tired the next day, right?
Yeah. Did you ever go back and finish it?
Final Fantasy VIII?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I also made Magno play that.
Okay. Because that'd be kind of frustrating. Like, I understand that you get to do 99%, but then not be able to finish it was like almost maddening, almost worse.
That's a good curveball you throw me there, because that was the point where I first then got my first emulator at some point.
Right, so you could finish the game on your own.
Yeah, so I could finish the game, yeah. There was that in Germany when we were like 12, 13, 14, there was the big guys in school. They were 18, 19 last year, schoolers. Uh-huh. And they were like, hey, we're doing this big LAN parties in the fire department store thing there where we can put 50 computers there. Okay, let's do this. And then you get all the emulators and stuff like that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. The big guys kind of taught us what is still possible for us.
Sure. So as you're getting older, you're playing more video games on your own, especially on the computer. Was there any other things that you gravitated towards besides Diablo? Or were you ever into WoW, or did you ever get into like StarCraft or anything?
Yeah. Okay, not StarCraft so much, but obviously after Diablo 2, you get in contact with Warcraft 3. That was a masterpiece, I think. And then the Blizzard trap was was foolproof, right? So everybody was hooked, and yeah, I was played WoW till like always. Still sometimes logging in, to be honest.
Did you spend a lot of time doing it?
Yeah, especially at the base, like 2005. I played it a lot, like when it released.
This is like the college years, university years, right? Like
yeah, but shortly before.
Okay.
Yeah. I kind of didn't make it through high school, to be honest, at that time, because I was just so burned out, and I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. My mom died. I was a bit mad. I wanted to earn some money. And so I ditched my high school finish exam, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I had to fought my way back in there later. And I got my license to go to university if I wanted to.
I see. That's got to be tough, man. Like trying to just navigate life after your mom passing, and then school's got to feel almost like, what's the point, right? Like,
yeah, kind of a bit. Yeah.
So you did go back and finish though. Like what would be your diploma, I guess, or your high school degree?
Yes. I did it. Okay. Part to my education to become a child mender. I had to attend school as well.
Mm.
And they were like, oh, your marks are pretty good. Could you imagine doing your Abitur, like your high school diploma? And I said, yeah, why not? Yeah, and then I got it.
Nice. What was your introduction to then like streaming or Twitch or even speedrunning? Did you know about people doing like speed runs or watching speed runs early on?
Yeah, I knew about speed runs. I saw games done quick and stuff, and I was always amazed by that. But my introduction to Twitch was actually when Diablo 3 came out. I visited a friend, and he had very good internet. And as you maybe know, in Germany,
I've heard
it took some time for our politicians to realize that the copper cables are not enough for television purposes. Mm. Internet is a thing, even if it's new, right?
Right.
So streaming was hard because we had no upload anywhere in the north. And I visited that friend a little bit to the west, 2 hours away, and he had big internet bandwidth. And we played Diablo 3, and I started streaming a bit. And I had like 50 viewers a day at that time. So that was actually enjoyable, but since I had to go back to my village, I just it froze there. Mm. I think I still can do my what's called when you have your first major goals completed on Twitch. I completed that in 2012 or 13 or something, but I never signed anything. I have no emotes or stuff like that.
Oh yeah, like
affiliation. Yeah.
Affiliates. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So are you still in that village? Is the internet still bad there?
No, I'm now in Bremen. Maybe.
Oh, okay. It's
one of the harbor cities. Yeah.
I see.
Now it's good.
I see. Okay. So you got into Twitch pretty early then.
Yeah. I saw it first. I think it was called, we watched some Justin TV before, I think it was called something like that. Yeah. And then immediately after Twitch came out, I could claim the, I also have the Broger account somewhere, but I lost my password, but I don't know.
Of course.
So for now, I'm still with the zeros instead of the O's.
That works.
Yeah.
So as you're streaming and playing, was there other games that you began to take notice of? Like, when do you then find Link to the Past Randomizer? You said it was through Spleeby, but how did you even find it?
I don't know, to be honest. I was thinking about this interview coming up, obviously. I was like, what would you answer about how did you come in contact with Link to the Past? And it was always just Spleeby coming into my mind. I just think it's the combination of being in love with Super Nintendo and always from time to time playing your emulators. And then the streaming got bigger and bigger over the last 10 years, I would say. Yeah, it's the last 12 years or 11, 10 years. Yeah, and at some point I must have been, I think I saw some guy, I don't know his name, something with Nova, and he played all the kind of retro games. And then there was like a thumbnail of Spleeby playing a Link to the Past randomizer. What the hell is that? And obviously clicking there and watching and seeing him like opening stuff and that, wait, why is the Zomaria in this chest? Like, kind of what Magno also said. Yeah, and then there was the start into kind of randomizer, right? And yeah, also kind of speed running. Yeah.
Yeah. When you saw that, did you go like, I need to try this? Or was it, this is cool, let me watch for a while?
I watched for a while, but I also tried it like for myself. I think I started with a cross, not a cross keys, with a Desanity Sword or something, because I thought, like, I'm good at this game, right? And I had no idea in that Freezer Room had a chest at that time.
Oh, okay.
I got wrecked by Freezer Room in my first game. I still remember that.
Oh, man. That's so funny. It's funny that you didn't just go with like a regular open, that you're like, I'm good, I'm going to go swordless Kisanity. That's hilarious.
I think I always cleared the game at least once a year on my emulator or my Super Nintendo. And so I felt pretty comfortable with know everything, usually never forget anything. So that helped.
Mm. So how long then did it take you to find people in the German community?
Yeah, with that first bigger tournament, I think I got, who did I met first? I think I was quite fast to be playing with Ramon, actually. Because Ramon was also a bit newer, but maybe not, but already pretty good. And I was like, oh, I really hyped for him in the German tournament and did like all the emote spam in the Speed Gaming Deutsch channel and stuff. And then, we kind of liked each other, and then we always played 80 keys. He made me play all the 80 keys all the time, every day. And I never beat him. It was a bit on off at the first 1, 2, 3 years. I played a bit, joined like the tournaments, but then I vanished. People always say, yeah, Brugger, we know that name, but he will be gone after the tournament to World of Warcraft, whatever, other games, right? And I think this is the time when also Magno emerged with that tournament. I think it's now 3 years ago, 21, that I got interested in also play more and become better. Ladder came then, and yeah, Magno hooked me a bit with trying more. Like, there's more. And
I see. So when you started playing and racing, was it mostly in the German community? Were you doing races, or was it just kind of offline, not streaming racing, practicing like Asyncs and stuff?
Yeah, we did like community races, but still with Discord, right? And with people like Tale, Tito was already there. Yeah, sometimes Ravis and so. And then I realized, okay, I have a good route here. My seat seems decent. I think I could win this. And then there was stuff like I couldn't do Ice Palace Bomb Jump first because I was like, oh, I'm so not going to learn this. I just play like a few seeds a month or a few months. But then it started to trigger you, right? So I could have win this if you could do this glitch. And it was that time nobody went ever to Ice Palace. And before Icebreaker,
Icebreaker, yeah.
Yeah, it was the left side swamp of pre-Icebreaker. Mm-hmm. The entire dungeon was.
Right.
Yeah, and then I got hooked and stayed there. The other games, I have no active game except Zelda right now, I would say. I play this and that a little bit here and a little bit there. But yeah, kind of stayed here now for 3 years now, I would say, very active.
So when you were first playing, though, you would play for a little bit, maybe play a tournament or here and there, and then just kind of bounce and go do other games. It wasn't like you felt like you're a really big part of the community. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I didn't feel that much of a community at that time at first. It started with Magno, and it started more with international stuff, like when realizing there's league and main tournament and stuff like that.
Right. You started around the time of COVID, right? During the pandemic, it sounds like you started playing around 2020.
Yeah, it started 2020, right? Yeah. A little bit later, I would say. Yeah.
Okay, do you think that played a part in finding, or were, because everyone was home and...
Yeah, you know that memes, right? With three different pictures being all the same picture with pre-COVID, after COVID, during COVID.
That's kind of how it was for you. Was it didn't matter that COVID or pandemic was going, you're still doing the same thing. I think
it didn't matter that much. Yeah, to be honest. Okay. Yeah.
That makes sense. That's funny.
I can see that it mattered for other people though.
Sure. I mean, I work from home, so I'm always home. Like during COVID, the biggest difference was I wasn't home alone. Like my kids and my wife were home now. You know, not a lot changed. I was still here, just working, plugging away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that.
So your introduction to Magno was during one of the German tournaments?
Yeah, exactly. I think I saw him play and we kind of got into contact. And I noticed quite fast that we had a good relationship. Mm-hmm. And then I invited him and three others to my place where we could then play local area network party with cook. I cooked for them all and we played some games and also board games and obviously Randall. Yeah.
Sure. How quickly was that? Did it go from I'm meeting Magno to I'm inviting him over to my place?
I would say like half a year, maybe.
Oh, okay. So a decent amount of time. It wasn't like, hey, I met this guy next week. He's coming over.
No. It was like a few months, weeks, I would say.
I see. So what was it about Magno? What was it that drew you to him? Like, obviously, you guys are become really close friends, obviously hanging out in real life and everything. But is it because you're both kind of memers? I don't want to mean that in a derogatory way, but you guys, I feel like there's people that are just like, they're here to have a good time. You know what I mean? Like, they don't take things too seriously. That doesn't mean they're not good. Obviously, you're good. You guys, well, you know, we'll get to like your league run here in a little bit, but it feels like you guys are just like, I don't know, having more fun than everyone else.
Yeah, we have our good and bad times, I would say. We kind of can be very angry at each other.
Sure. I mean, that's what brothers are like, though, right? Like,
yeah, right?
I love my brother, but there's times where I want to kick him in the teeth. Like, but that doesn't mean I don't still, you know, love my brother for sure.
Yeah, I could just copy paste that, I guess. Yeah, we kind of emphasize on each other and make each other stronger sometimes, though. Because I remember in a late night, Schulzer came into Discord and was like, "What are you guys doing?" And I was like, "Hey, we are doing GT climb practice. Oh, can you do the modem bounce?" And then there was awkward silence. And so, no, we can't. Should I show you? I said, "Oh, he's actually offering help. Nice. Yeah, show us, please." And then Magno got it quite quickly in. Like, damn, I can't stand that. I have to also can do this now. And I was always a bit bad with the modem bounce, I must say. But sure. I got my first hover in like 3 years ago already, and I got quite good with mimic clipping at that time. And Magno was like, "Oh, why are you so good at mimic clipping?" So, dude, why are you so good at modem bouncing? Sure. There's like always like making each other, like one can do that, what the other guy can do, right? And can do it better and faster. So there it was, it's a positive synergy of competitive attitudes, you know, we're pushing each other sometimes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I think that's important, is to find someone that's almost like the peanut butter to your jelly, right? Like there's someone that just compliments you and goes well. You're different enough, good enough at different things, and it complements the relationship for sure.
Yeah, and also worked out in real life pretty good. So I invited him. I took him with to a camping event of my girlfriend's family. I invited him to a big metal festival last year and stuff like that. So we also do a lot of real life stuff together.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So when you decided to team up in the league for season 4, whose idea was that? Or did you, was season 4 your first season? Yeah, it was.
We just played season 6, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, then it was season 4.
Tanwer Farid All-Stars from Germany. I don't know what that means.
Yes.
Never knew what that meant, but.
Nobody knows.
You, Magno, and Teto, right?
For the first season. Yeah, Teto or Tito was, his team was, prior, his team was, I think, Ralen and Death King or something, or Kattobat, something like that. And they kind of split, and Tito just came into Discord at some point and were like, "Hey, I need 2 teammates, and maybe we can then keep this team alive." And we immediately made it to Invitational, kind of took the shortcut there because there was an opportunity to do so. And
were you surprised that you guys got invited season 4?
I think there was a big hole at that time, maybe a summer hole or something. So I don't know if we were surprised, but we were hyped, obviously. Like, ooh, now we are in the international stage. And let's check it out. I mean, we played the main tournament as well. My first tournament was even one of the main tournaments, but I just tried to play some of the qualifiers. Actually, not so bad, I think. I should check up on that. Yeah, but then we were there.
I do remember in season four there was some holes that needed to be filled. Like there was quite a few. I think we had like 8 spots or something like that that needed to be filled. And there was discussion. I don't know if you guys know this or this was ever talked about, but I didn't really know who you and Magno were. I knew Teto, but he just got relegated the season before. Like his team went 1-7, I think.
Yeah, and he came back.
Yeah, and so he joined a new team. And it was like, do we put someone who was relegated back in the Invitational?
With two new people nobody knows.
Exactly. And so...
it's a bit lame, to be honest.
Right. There was like questions of like, should we put this team in the Invitational? And again, since I didn't know, really didn't know a lot of the German runners back then, but didn't know who you were, I was like hesitant to be like, yeah, my vote is for them. But I think obviously I got overruled. I don't even know. Maybe if I was that stubborn to say no, they shouldn't be in. But I just remember thinking like, who are these guys?
I think that's fair. I think I would have done the same as you did then.
But I mean, you guys had a decent season that first season, right? Like you went 7-7.
Yeah, it was okay, I think, for our first season.
Yeah. And then, you know, you guys come back. I think season 5, you replaced Teto with Tam.
Yeah.
I mean, we heard it from Magna, but from your perspective, how did Tam come to join your team?
I wrote, Tam, you're looking for a team. We are one person short. And I don't even know what our standpoint was to each other at that time. I just barely knew Tam.
Mm.
And I knew Tam told me that Wurfchick was out this year, something like that. I think mm-hmm. Tam was with Wurfchick and some third yeah. person. I just don't know right now. And so this formed. And it was needed to be done quick because Tito told us a bit late there, unfortunately, that he was going to leave us. Yeah, so we had to fill that spot. And Drossi was like, go, 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 go. And I said, yeah, we're trying.
Where does the name come from? Potato pouch? Where does that come from?
Usually, if you're a bit of a stereotype kind of guy, you can adjust some vegetables and stuff like that to a country, right? So some people say Germans are potatoes.
Oh.
Like okay. The French has the baguette and stuff like that.
Sure, right? Yeah. Yeah, I've heard the baguette thing. I don't think I've ever heard the potato thing for Germany.
No, it's just, Kartoffeln by potato is like a very German food source, I would say. Like this is basically in most of the dishes.
I see.
Nowadays, people eat noodles and rice, which is awesome, I think. But back in the day, my grandmother, for example, there was every time, every day, there would have been potatoes on the table. No noodles, no rice, no grains, no other grains then.
Just potatoes.
Yeah, potatoes, not a grain, but yeah. Yeah, and pouch. We tried to make it really quick with our team name, and I just combined it, right? Tam, so if we took a German stereotype, we just took right. an Australian stereotype, yep. right? So we took the yep. pouch.
That's great.
And it's basically everything about that. There's not much thought. And then we just asked, I think, Dunsey, Lo Dunsey, some artist from German community, to draw us a little, what's it called, kangaroo with two little potatoes that are being carried by Tam, obviously.
That's really good. I dig it. So tell me about your experience. We'll get into last season particularly, but your first two seasons, first with Teto and then with Tam joining the team. I don't know. Did you enjoy the league? Have you enjoyed the league up until season 6? And, and kind of tell me about your experience overall.
Yeah, for season 4, everything was new, right? So we had me and Magno, obviously. Magno was already a bit more looking more into American players or non-German players and knew, oh, this guy is crazy good, Brogo, you have to watch them. And they said, oh, okay, let's do this together. And so we started also watching people like Matt, for example. And then we kind of got a little bit hyped. Magno was Magno started by watching Andy. I think he told that. And he was craving. I said, please let me play Andy. Please let me play Andy. But dude, it's cross keys. We can both play. Oh yeah, true. Okay. So you take Andy, I think I played Futong, I think in season 4, long time ago. And
yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, so I started to learn, meet new people like Hayfield Bay, for example, a very nice person. And yeah, people started to also know us. You start to watch American streams, English streams, Spanish and French streams, and people are nice. And you be like, should we try to do an English commentary at some point? yeah, let's try this. And yeah, that, at that point, then we were kind of integrated, I would say, into the big Rando community, not just the German part. And I enjoy that, not being dwelling in your just your own language there. There's so many more people to meet. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the German community is probably the biggest one, right? Like outside of, I guess, the States, but it feels like it's easy to be a even a small cog in a big part of the German community because it is so large.
Yeah, we're getting bigger and bigger. I'm in the German, I'm running as a tournament organization post right now, and I saw that it's a lot of work and yeah, trying to give something back, getting more integrated in the community right now. Yeah, and we are kind of big. And this is also scary because last year I played someone I had no idea existed, like you said about us. At that time, I was already a bigger name, I guess, especially for the Germans. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, this seat, I will definitely win this one. This was a stupid last location hookshot in Hookshot Cave. And when I watch race time, I see he's done. And I'd be like, what the heck? And Magno will be like, dude, you got destroyed. He hovered the hell out of you. He's like, what? And then I was like, oh, I can do this, but not on a what's called on a very good pattern regular base, I would say.
Sure.
So it's the same with Magno's Moldorm bounce, right? So if you get destroyed by someone you maybe not know, you kind of want to get better and avoid to that happen again.
Sure.
Yeah.
For sure. All right, so let's talk about season six. You guys come back with Magno and Tam and almost win the whole thing.
Yeah, that was amazing, yeah.
So, I don't know, tell me about the season. How did you feel about everything going into the season? You guys had a really good record overall, 11-3. You only lost two matches entirely.
I lost only to Tammy Run in a one-on-one. Shout-outs to Tammy Run at this point. He's a good Swedish friend of mine. We started... I think we always start very casually. Like, we don't have much, we didn't have much expectation. Tam is also that super nice, loving person, very shy at first. And I always be like, Tam, go all out, show some spine, crush your opponent, stuff like that, right? And nowadays, Tam starts to, we should obliterate them, stuff like that. So we have fun in the Potato Pouch channel. And it started with against Mottebeschen, the other German team. And we started 2-0, I think, with Tam playing both co-ops at that time. And we adjusted then so everybody can have like decent amount of games this season. And we lost our first game against Skelly, I think. Tam versus Skelly, like very close. And there was a rematch of season 5, I think, where Skelly also won. Skelly is also like... huge competitor in my eyes, one of the biggest. Me and Tam then played Team Hime, which was also a super new addition there with 2C. And I was very hyped to play 2C, and I asked to play 2C, even though you could like argue, yo, Tam is way better than you, Broger. Let Tam maybe play 2C. And I was like, no, I want to use League to meet new people as well. Like play someone you have not played before. And I played Kermit and I played Ravis. I can play them in German area, so I never played 2C and I wanted to play 2C, and Tam won versus Ravis, I won versus 2C, so it started to look very, very good. Then we played the Koskese matchup with Top Life and Brief and Senior, and this also went good, and then Tamiron put a little stop to our winning spree, and then Magno also lost to Matt, which I didn't see because I was in my holiday somewhere, I think. Yeah, but other than that, I think we stomped quite heavy through the group phase.
Yeah. Yeah. After that loss to Matt, you didn't lose again until round two of the playoffs. So,
Round two, obviously, one of our most hyped adversaries there, like Washed. We were very eager to play Korik and Ek. I knew Ek at that time only from the name and listening sometimes to him commentating, and always found him like really hilarious. And then obviously knowing Jem, but you rarely get to play Gem in German tournaments. Gem just joins like maybe Invitational or League or stuff like that.
Sure.
And so we were kind of hyping at that. So we kind of were like, maybe we lose spoiler, but we can see that we maybe win the AD and the we were kind of strong with entrance, actually. And yeah.
That was a close one. So it was you and Tam versus Jim and Ak.
Yeah.
And it looks like Jim actually finished first overall with a 1:17.11. Yeah. And then you finished 10 seconds after that. Were you sweating?
Yeah, I think we were. It was very, you know, if you play Ak and Jim, you kind of think yourself as the weakest link at that encounter. So that was, you are in 1-1 standing at that point. It's a best of three, the third game. You are sweating.
Yeah.
After beating Jim and Ak the Boker, it kind of pops into your mind that, oh, now we can win the whole thing.
Yeah.
I kind of think we outsmarted the last location years a bit with our picking there.
How so? What did you pick?
I think we picked AD, me and Tam, and Mike played that. So we knew Mike was out of the third game if it comes to a third game. And they were the higher pick because they were 11-1, I think. Mm-hmm. So they knew they must have picked AD Kistan. And so we picked Spoiler with Tam and Magno, who had a fantastic season overall in Spoiler. But yeah, if it comes to the last round against Infinity and Bigog, yeah, things went a bit unlucky, I would say. I skipped the hookshot and Skywoods in the first game. We didn't pick retrans, which could have been better, I guess, for our team, me and Magno. Magno was never playing in playoffs, which was also a bit sad, I guess. Yeah, and then Magno and Tam played that dooming last seed of Spoiler, where Will and Reckon just realized that Spy Cave was a thing, and Reckon put that bottle from Skywood's front in and a lot of hard containers, and Magno had to guide Tam all the way to, I think, Third Rock Big Chest to get the burner.
Yeah. It was still relatively close. I mean, you look at the time, it was just over a minute, but Spoiler, over a minute is pretty big.
Yeah.
But, I mean, second overall in the league, in the Invitational, that's got to feel huge. How are you feeling after all of it? I know the loss doesn't feel great, but in perspective, right? Like, that's got to be awesome.
Yeah, we felt, I think we were kind of happy. I think our main act was to play Jim there. We were kind of hoping to play him. And we played that 2-1, as we stated before, very, very close with only a few seconds difference.
Yeah.
So that was already like, you put your goals, right? You like, so it would be cool if we reach like half finals or quarter finals. And yeah, if you make it past that point, it always feels just better and better. And then you feel good. And then you can maybe advance. You're right, though. Losing in the end 0-2, that wasn't feeling that good. But yeah, it can go either way, I guess.
Right. It doesn't feel good in the moment, but I think when you put it in perspective, right, like it's been a few months now, you've had time to get away from it, and you can look back and say, we kicked that season's ass, right?
Yeah. And you still learn something. Like, check Spike Cave early in Spider Log. Right. It's something Magno does now.
Yeah, totally. Like, you know, Gamma and I and Shireen lost to Gamma not checking Bumper Cave. Like, now all the time, we always get to give him shit if he doesn't check Bumper Cave, right? Like,
I know.
It's the same sort of thing. It's like you make those skips and then you never skip it. And of course, every time you don't skip it, it's nothing. But
it's exactly that. But Spy Cave has a bit Damocles sword like attitude for us now, because last year, too, in this fifth season, we also skipped like the Spy Cave. Magno mistracked it and cross keys or whatever we played there. And we never made that. And then we had to play, I think we played 1-1 against Zega and Shady Force in the group stage. And then we had to play them immediately again because we lost that one game there against the other guys. So that was a bit unfortunate. I think we stood 2-0 group stage wise. Then we lose 0-2 in the brackets, and then you're out, and you're basically 2-2 in standing, right? So that feels so bad.
Yeah.
But you always enjoy beating new people. Is what I cherish the most, I think. Nowadays, I could just go to to an American Discord or to a Swedish Discord, and everybody, and there would still be somebody saying hi and talking about casual stuff, even, and it's fun.
Sure. So let's talk about that. How do you feel about your place in the community? Do you feel welcome? Do you feel like you're a part of not just the German community, but the community in general? And do you enjoy where you're at?
Yeah, I'm enjoying it a lot right now. That's what I said at first. I was that kind of on-off guy, right? Because I knew myself from other games like Warcraft, where I was never really eager to stay in a one place very long, just hopping on to the next group, like kind of people. And yeah, I noticed that it's like feeling home here in Zelda, staying here for years now. This is going to be meaning something. So like I said before, I'm trying to give something back now and helping with community issues like the German tournament organization part now. And yeah, having fun and looking forward to how changes develop or what is still to come on glitches and stuff like that. Always hyped.
Mm.
So yeah, I feel very welcome like everywhere.
You said you wanted to do more, right? You feel like you want to give back. So are you putting on a tournament or?
I was part of the team that did the modes for this German tournament, which is part of is running right now. Yeah.
I see. What about like Tark or Council? Did you ever think about running for Council when we had that? Or do you want to do any of that sort of like dirty work or I don't know, do you like where you're at?
I have never thought about that at the moment so far.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of wrote my application to the German guys with kind of like, I am not scared of doing the dirty work. I don't really care much about reputation. If someone is like, oh, I don't like him, it's like, is his choice or their choice. I don't really mind. I can do the nasty stuff if it needs to be done. So that's maybe that's how I got in.
Yeah. It does help to have people that are, I don't want to say they don't care, but they're not worried about their,
yeah.
Get it clearly. You don't worry about what other people think about you. I think it's hard to do. It's sometimes tough to be in a position where you're in charge of something and you have to make decisions that aren't going to be the most popular and people might not like you for it, but someone's got to do it. I think it's interesting when people have that sort of mindset.
For me, it's the same in also in real life. Like I don't need everybody to like me. If there's people who don't like me, that's fine. I won't cry about that. I'm just always saying also to others that have some issues with that. Some people always try to make everyone happy, I guess. And they hurt themselves while doing so, I always think. And you can only be happy if you can only make other people happy if you are happy yourself. And sometimes it's less is more, right?
Uh-huh.
Having two friends, which are good friends, like Magno, for example. And that's helping, makes you thriving in your relationships and getting a better perspective on what's really important, I guess.
Sure. No, that's super, it's a super healthy perspective. And allows you to not worry about the bullshit that you don't need to worry about, right? Like
you do not have to be ignorant or delusional, but you have to put your resources into the spots where it matters, so you don't waste them. Because everybody has finite resources. Nobody is like has unlimited power.
Right. Yeah. Good stuff, man. All right, let's talk about Tilt. You seem very, very chill's not the right word, but you feel like it seems like you're very content with the choices that you make or the person that you are. So do you get tilted? And if you do get tilted, whether it's in the beginning of a seed or at the end of the seed, how do you handle it?
I think that got better. I think like 1 or 2 years ago, I would like negative snowball kind of like if the start was bad, I would like, okay, this is like lost. But I kind of stopped thinking like that. I always trying to think what the most likely way is my opponent plays. And I try to keep that in mind. Like if I say, okay, he most likely played Eastern Palace, then I stay with that thought, for example. And I don't go back on that thought. Like half an hour later, I say, he probably didn't do Eastern Palace. He did this now. So you have all those branches in your route then. What you are thinking your opponent does, then you do stupid stuff. So you either, you should condemn one line they may have walked, and it sometimes helps. So you can make adjustments if your light world was bad, maybe, or you died an animizer or something like that. And you also get a knowledge. If you know more people, you have a basic idea how good they are. And then you have to think like, okay, I cannot waste 3 minutes against a fear agent. I have to do something else now. Otherwise, I will just walk behind most likely because the seed was very linear. There's no other way maybe he played that unless he trolled or was memeing or something. But if it's a tournament or something, it often helps me to keep one mind, like keep one thought in line. Like if I decided it's like this, I stay like this. And
yeah,
it helps.
That helps you to remain calm through it and not get tilted, right?
Yeah, I mean, you get at that point where you realize, okay, the rest of the seed was super linear. You're most likely doomed now. Then it's okay. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's like, okay, here is the seed. Okay, Lightweight was bad. We have to agree that the smart route is to play Pendant Pot now. I know I play, let's say I play Moogle Charm or someone. I thought, he is definitely in Pendant Pot right now. We have no more crystals to do. We have a flute or something like that. Why shouldn't I dip Pendant Swamp now? Or maybe Pendant Ice? I need to create some divergence. I think that's something a lot of people can do, but also a lot of people can't do. And sometimes I watch restreams and I'm like, you cannot really feel good, dude. You have to do something now. You really have to do something now. And then you see, they just walk in the footsteps of their adversary, right? And then he's like, okay, you will lose by 3 minutes, but you could have tried and maybe win by a few minutes. Or I always say, it's better to lose by 20 minutes by trying to find an out than to lose by only 2 minutes or something like or three. Same for winning. If you find like a nasty, nasty light world super meme check, just reinvest that time into another nasty check. So you can win by 20 minutes and feel like, ha, I obliterated my opponent, like Gamma would say, or something like that.
Yeah.
Or you can just play it safely then because you already had your big gamble moment and you can win by 8 minutes or something like that. Don't have to win always by 20 minutes to show dominance. So, yeah. So you can make your own perspective and thoughts, kind of your own guideline to keep on track and keep straight. And yeah, it helps. I think I got better at that.
It feels like you have a healthy perspective on wins and losses. So it feels like you don't get that tilted when you lose.
No, I think not. Maybe sometimes, back in the day, definitely. Maybe not at Zelda times, but before that.
Sure. And I think being angry that you lost or whatever is fine, but does it tilt you to the point where you're like, you hate the game and you curse out your opponent? And it doesn't feel like that's really an issue for you.
No, I mean, everybody of us curses at the game, right? But I never really blamed an opponent. I remember some time in Ladder, I played Rekken, and Rekken was a bit mad, and I comforted him, I think, as a winner. And he was like super cute then, be like, oh man, I really don't see how you can be so nice right now. It's like, yeah, I can see your point that you're maybe a little bit full of emotions right now, and I won't take it bad, right?
Yeah.
That was a nice experience sometimes. And sometimes people, you can make them, you can be there where they can blow off their steam. You don't have to be, and don't take it with to the next game or in the future.
Just
let them be angry. I always say, I mean, I learned diet mending and stuff, and kindergartner, and I know anger of wrath is an emotion that has to be allowed to be happen, that it needs to be done. It's nothing you can avoid forever. I see that at my sister right now. She's like having to endure that and trying to help her with that and stuff. But you shouldn't wreak havoc to other people, of course, but you should allow your emotions.
Find an outlet for that
outlet, emotion. Thanks. Yeah, that was the word I was looking for.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for doing the show, man. It was really fun having you on and completing the Magno Brogor duo. I think next time we'll have to have both of you guys on just to hear the crazy conversations that you guys have. But no, I really appreciate you doing this, man.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was fun. I just watched the time and we are 1 hour in now. So I hope I was good with my English.
Huge shout outs to Brogor. Really appreciate him being honest and open and just sharing his story. Really good stuff. Really, really, really big fan of Brogor and especially the way he approaches and handles tilt even. Like, I thought that was really insightful and something kind of to aspire to as well. So huge shout outs to him for coming on the show. Going to take a little break. We're not going to end the season yet, but we're going to be off for a few weeks and just going to recharge the batteries a little bit and figure out who to talk to next. I have some people in mind, but not sure the direction we're going to go with the last half of the season, but just a little break here, and then we'll be back for the last half of season number 5. I hope you all enjoyed it. It's been a really fun, it might be my favorite season. We've talked to a lot of people that are just not as well known, and I really enjoy that. I like talking to the people that aren't the biggest streamers. Maybe you haven't won a lot of races, or they have, and they're just more quiet, you know. Really, really love talking to all these people. I think season 5 has been my favorite so far. But we'll see where it goes. We'll see who I talk to next. Downloads have been a little down, which is a little disappointing. I don't know if that's me or if it's a guest or what. But yeah, we're going to reassess and figure out what we're going to go with the show in the last half of season number 5. But I've loved season 5. My favorite, for sure. So yeah, come back for that. 216pod.com has all the links you would need for the show. Make sure you join our Discord. There's a link there on the website. Lots of conversation, sports related and Randall related going on over there. Just a fun place to hang out with a lot of fun different people. And I think that's going to do it. Really appreciate everyone listening to this season so far. Love any feedback that you have. And yeah, excited about the future. So off for a few weeks and then we'll be back here on the feed with some guests. I don't know who they are yet, but we'll figure that out. All right. Really appreciate you all listening. See you next time.